We'll go on to the next case. If you are ready, and this is from Mike Zuchowski versus the Town of Castle Rock. It's 2013 SC560. You're going to have the shift table sum here, if you could do so, please. Okay, this is the Zuchowski versus Castle Rock case. May I have you to appear in front of the petitioner, please?
Good morning.
Bill Zuchowski, on behalf of the fire department Zuchowski.
Thank you. And for the respondent, please.
Helena McKenna, on behalf of the Town of Castle Rock.
All right, thank you. Mr. O'Toole, you have 22 minutes, sir, and if you want to reserve something for rebuttal, then to keep your own time.
I will attempt to reserve 5 minutes, perhaps even more. The case in Zuchowski is a case of elevating risk, finding of risk over the finding of cause. From a factual perspective, the ALJ's opinion, i.e. the opinion of Judge Frumrich, was based on the facts as presented to him. The argument that was made throughout was based on the fact that melanoma, which firefighter Zuchowski had contracted, was, in the opinion of their expert, to be caused by exposure to sunlight. And the assumption, this is the assumption that underlies this opinion, is that the only exposure to sunlight is that which occurs outside of firefighting. And the other assumption was, he has a certain level of nevi or moles, that's what they refer to, and because there are a high number of them, his risk of cancer is higher and must not be the result of firefighting. Now this is a man who, at the time he injured himself and had diagnosed with melanoma, had been pulling on his boots and had carcinogens in that area, and had carcinogens all over his body. Now that's smut, or soot, I guess it's called. Smut, I guess, is in another context. At any rate, he's a line firefighter. He's a guy that's out and has been doing it for 24 years. Now the argument is, he has these nevi, which have been dysplastic, atypical. And therefore, this must not be due to firefighting. Now, when that question is asked, he has a certain predisposition. What about what percentage of the population have the same predisposition? Well, it turns out 10% of the population. So, in a population of 100,000, 10,000 have this. How many have? No. 50. 55. I can't remember the exact number, but it's certainly a very limited number. But we know that this particular individual has contracted this problem, and he is a firefighter, and he exposes himself day in and day out to these carcinogens. The argument is, and the Court of Appeals makes clear that their position is, that the presumption can be overcome by the showing of a quantum of risk. And it's our position that you can't. And, you know, the logic of the evidence in that case, in which was convincing to the ALJ, related to the fact that melanoma occurs regardless of UV levels. The UV levels are higher in Colorado than they are in the Northwest, Washington, Oregon, and yet the evidence is that they have higher incidence of melanoma. Our position in this case, of course, follows on our arguments in the Chris case, which is that the presumption is the presumption, and that an establishment of risk is not going to suffice to overcome the presumption when the its experts specifically say we can't tell you what caused it. I don't know what caused it. It's impossible to say. So our position is he should be given the benefit of the presumption because, again, the evidence may be circumstantially related, but it's not medical evidence, it's speculation. You know, it's interesting, Justice Coates, you mentioned the burdens of proof in a civil case. And you know, going back to one of your decisions, the Supreme Court's decision, even going back to the decision in 1951, you know, the whole purpose in this fact-finding process is to establish causation beyond mere possibility and speculation. That's what this court said in the Kaiser Permanente versus Sharp case. Why should it be any different when you have a presumption protecting firefighters than a polling council? I should say that the fire commission cannot overcome that presumption by medical evidence unless it's medical evidence based on speculation. And that's what it's based on.
Could I ask you one question about the way you used the terms right there? You're putting speculation at one end. You talked about medical evidence and have emphasized medical evidence, but I thought in this last statement you seemed to juxtapose medical evidence with circumstantial evidence.
I apologize. Sometimes I get wound up in thought, and my thoughts don't match. The fire district, in this case, presented information of a circumstantial link of risk to the development of melanoma. It then jumped from that into speculation that those risks caused the melanoma. That speculation and the possibility that there is some link is nothing more than speculation.
If there is evidence from past events to indicate that a particular cause, external cause, sun, let's say, whatever, leads to melanoma in a certain percentage of cases or large number of cases, would you call that speculation or would you call that evidence of a likelihood? And isn't that what we're doing in evidence entirely? I mean, since certainty, presumably, unless you have a logical tautology, you never have certainty. So we're talking about, and we use terms like preponderance or clear and convincing or beyond a reasonable doubt to express the degree. From prior evidence of an event, an external stimulus, and a result, don't we arrive at what we consider to be legitimate probability or likelihood of an occurrence?
That analogy fails because there is no evidence of a preponderance the way you're discussing it. In fact, it goes the opposite way. If you look, I mean, we argue this, made it clear, brought in the information. Dr. Milliken's their expert. He cannot say and states it's impossible to say what causes melanoma. Then I ask him, well, there are 99,920, not just some odd like that, white males, 39, the age of Zukowski. Zukowski. When is that? All right. They've not contracted melanoma. They've been exposed to the same sun he's been exposed to. Certainly for age 39-year-olds, there's no overwhelming proof of a causation relationship between his exposure to sun. And is
an overwhelming proof required under this standard, do you think?
You're the one that suggested that there could be a circumstance where there are overwhelming proof, but I say you're wrong. It doesn't work that way.
Or is all that's required proof that it's more likely than not?
How? By speculation? By determining we don't know?
what causes this problem. Therefore, we want you to assume, and you will assume that that doesn't represent a point of information, that actually represents evidence. Our position is that's wrong.
Well, don't you have gone for here in this case that the ALJ found?
I'm sorry if I move forward.
In this case, the ALJ found in favor of the firefighter, right? After hearing the evidence, have I got that right?
Right, and RCAO at the help.
So after listening to the experts here, in this case, as different from the other case, which involved a particular form of cancer, which those experts say could not have been occupationally related.
Right.
Let's just accept that. You have a case here where the ALJ is found in favor of the firefighter based on the fact that melanoma could be caused, aggravated, or whatever, by this exposure. Have I got that right?
Well, it would be disingenuous for me to suggest he wasn't relying on just Judge Russell's opinion in the prior case, Chris, for the burden. So, because he practiced that.
Well, I'm trying to look at the ALJ.
Just the fact. That's
we're supposed to give the ALJ's findings.
The ALJ's findings were sufficient for determination of compensability. That's our position.
Because in this particular case, the ALJ is saying that the preponderance of the evidence burden was not carried by Castle. Right?
And that he does reference also that the burden was attempted to be carried essentially by speculation. That's how I view this opinion, at least that's how I argue.
Counsel, I'm sorry, can I get you just to repeat what you said so I understand it? Are you saying the ALJ relied on Chris?
I am saying that when the ALJ looked at the ICAP's opinion in Chris, talked about the burden of overcoming the presumption, was briefed on cases from other jurisdictions on overcoming presumption, relying on medical testimony which disagreed with the scientific validity of the presumption, hence comes to the conclusion that the presumption is not overcome. The decision in Chris, for the appeals decision, Chris, doesn't come down until November of 2013. So. And we argue that in May of 2012, and I haven't had it in a number of years.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to understand the timing.
Thank you. I don't know if I saved any time.
Oh, yes, you did. 10 minutes. 10 and a half minutes, Mr. O'Toole. Thank you. Ms. McKenna.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
The court. Again, my name is Elena McKenna. I represent the town of Castle Rock on behalf of respondents in this matter. And the issue here is simply a shift in the burden of proof from the initial burden that's typically on claimants to establish causation and a compensability issue. The burden simply shifts to respondents or employers in this matter to show by preponderance of the evidence that the claimant's cancer did not occur on the job. The statute itself includes this preponderance of the evidence standard. And as this court has noted, is it more likely true than not that the respondents overcame a presumption by establishing this particular individual's cancer, melanoma, did not occur on the job? I think it's important to note here that the claimant argued in his brief extensively that respondents attacked the initial presumption or the scientific validity behind it. But to the contrary, the party stipulated at the outset of the hearing that the presumption applied. So the hearing went forward initially with the knowledge that respondents had to meet their burden of proof in establishing that this individual's cancer did not occur on the job.
What do you mean by stipulated that the presumption applied?
So the presumption applies if the claimant meets an initial set of factors, meaning that they, you know, were an employer or five years.
So you got past that.
Correct. At the very outset, the party stipulated that was already presumed.
I understand. I was using the presumption more for we're talking about the presumption here, whether they've overcome the presumption of causation. And that there was no stipulation like that.
No, the hearing solely went forward on whether respondents met their burden in overcoming that statutory presumption.
So you skipped to the second part of the statute right away?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
And I think it's important to look at the plain language, which is unambiguous of 841-209, and that The language does not include any tests or any evidence. It does not address, it does not limit, it does not prohibit what type of medical evidence may be sufficient to overcome a statutory presumption. So therefore, it logically follows, this remains a traditional occupational disease case. We need to go to traditional occupational disease analysis under the Workers' Compensation Act, which traditionally utilizes risk factor analyses in determining causation issues. And the statute itself labels these cancers as occupational diseases. Therefore, once the burden of proof is shifted to respondents, risk factor evidence must be considered as they are considered in all other occupational disease cases under the workers' compensation system. Although the statute is unambiguous and is the plain language is clear, I think it's important to look at the legislative history with respect to the General Assembly's discussion of the burden of proof and the fact that they rejected a clear and convincing evidentiary burden in favor of a preponderance of the evidence burden because they understood the difficult nature in assessing causation issues in these cancer cases. As there are no known causes of cancer, which all experts agreed in this case, and there are only known risk factors, if respondents are precluded from ever arguing risk factor evidence in attempting to overcome the statutory presumption, then we're left with a strict liability statute. The employer's liability will become absolute, which is directly contrary to the legislative intent of the statute, demonstrated by including rebuttable presumption as well as including a preponderance of the evidence standard. I think we also need to look at the fact this statute does not require respondents or employers to rule out firefighting as a contributory factor. If, in fact, the claimant meets the presumption, then it establishes the basic caveat that firefighting will always play some contributory role to some degree in one's development of cancer or melanoma, as in this case. And so the test really needs to be one of probability. And that is, what is the more likely cause when comparing the statistically significant increased relative risk from sources outside of firefighting as compared to the risk of firefighting?
But this really does sound, based on the ALJ's findings in this case, different from the other case in which the evidence ruled out, except in certain circumstances where that firefighter wasn't exposed to that particular material, that this could have been a causative agent. His firefighting could have been a causative agent in this melanoma. So doesn't the benefit of the doubt go to the firefighter under those circumstances?
Yeah.
How can you rule out that this melanoma wasn't caused by the occupational exposure?
And that was my position we were addressing right here, that the standard is it doesn't require us to rule it out. If it is a contributory factor, for example, in this case, the risk factors established that his atypical nevi or mold increased his risk of developing melanoma by 6 to 10 times, or 600 to 1,000%, this individual is more likely to develop melanoma based on these atypical molds. You compare that to the risk factor of firefighting, which statistically is established at 1.32 or 28% increased relative risk. So, you know, even if you do apply that, you have to rule this out as a contributory or significant contributory factor, those percentages clearly establish that the increased relative risk for developing melanoma based on atypical nevi as well as the sun exposure were significantly higher than his risk as a firefighter. So the issue isn't did firefighting not play any causative factor or any positive role in the development of the cancer? Is what is the more statistically significant increased risk relative risk factor when you weigh all the risk factors in this case? The Lemaster study, which is the basic premise behind the presumption and form the basis of the presumption, based itself on risk factor evidence. So it would be incongruous or manifestly unjust if the whole basis of the presumption is based on risk factor evidence, yet respondents would be subsequently precluded from presenting risk factor evidence in an effort to overcome this statutory presumption. If you look at the claimant's own expert's testimony from Dr. Mayer, she even agrees that based on this particular individual's atypical nevi, his increased risk for contracting melanoma raised to 6.36. Compare that to the 1.32 risk And again, that shows the more statistically significant risk factor here that causes melanoma was this atypical mold. The problem with ALJ's order, and if you look at his order, I believe it's paragraphs 12 and 13 of his order, he interpreted the City of Littleton case to require respondents to prove an exact specific cause or a cause in fact of the claimant's melanoma in order to overcome the statutory presumption. And as we all know here, and all medical experts have agreed, there are no known causes of cancer. There's only these risk factors. And the interpretation I see of ALJ's order is that he felt constrained by the City of Littleton case interpretation, as noted in his footnotes, that the remedy essentially lies with the appellate court, which is why we're here for your honors today.
Could I ask you a question? It does seem to me that your case poses a kind of a different wrinkle from the one that we just heard, and you've been dealing with it here, I think, with regard to causation. But let me pose it this way. It seems to me that rather than talking about the likelihood of a cause, you've added the wrinkle, a question about the proximateness of the cause, suggesting that even though there may be a strong likelihood that a work-related cause was involved or work-related exposure was a cause, nevertheless, this statute would allow recovery only if it was more proximate than some other cause.
And I would argue that it's not more proximate or more probable. What is the more likely or more probable cause of the claimant's cancer when you're comparing the risk factors?
Okay. And let me ask you right there, because I think you're getting right to the point that I want to flesh out. And that is, I thought I heard you say, though, that even though it was clear that other work-related matters, exposures, earlier in life, whatever, molds, made it more likely that the work-related cause would result in this cancer. Nevertheless, there's no recovery because the likelihood that a work-related cause would result in this cancer was increased because of something that was non-work-related. But those aren't the probability of whether one's a cause, is it?
And I think I understand what you're saying.
More of a cause.
Correct. And I think this position was addressed in the City of Littleton case in the standard that, in my opinion, was contradictory to the initial standard that they presented. In the City of Littleton case, which I argue is applicable here and supports our position, they indicated that respondents or employers may have difficulty locating the specific or disproving specific causation in cases because they would have to identify a wide and unspecified range of potential exposures that an individual as a firefighter has been exposed to over his lifetime. And because of that difficulty in ascertaining that type of evidence or ever locating it, which likely would be impossible, that proof of an alternative cause may be sufficient in overcoming the statutory presumption, which is what we presented here. The City of Littleton case also stated in part of its discussion that the presumption applies in the essence that the exposure to the firefighter would hasten the onset of this individual's cancer that would develop later on in life. And I think that's what you're getting at here. And my position on that, and as respondents, is that that's an incorrect standard. That if you apply the presumption at the outset, then if you subsequently apply a hastening presumption, that automatically makes this rebuttable presumption meaningless. You're never going to be able to present evidence to dispute the hastening based on the caveat of the presumption itself that this individual is a firefighter, met these criteria. How can you ever prove that the firefighter never hastened it? It becomes a strict liability statute. And I think the City of Littleton case resolved that conflict by providing this avenue to establish an alternative probable cause to overcome the presumption. And this case is different from the City of Littleton on another avenue. In the City of Littleton, the respondents tried to disprove general causation. Here we're dealing with specific causation, trying to disprove specific causation. We are trying to disprove this particular individual's melanoma, not the general avenue that melanoma can never be caused by firefighting based on X, Y, and Z. I think it's also important to note that the Court of Appeals in this case looked to other jurisdictions who have reviewed this issue. This is the first impression review by this court, and the Court of Appeals in this case found jurisdiction compelling that looked at a test of alternative probable causality. They didn't look for a test of definitive causation. They looked at jurisdictions that found the presumption was rebutted where an alternative probable cause was presented. And that is what we're simply seeking here. And in essence, we're not even seeking for a reversal. We're seeking for a remand because it's our position that the court, the lower court, ALJ, never even considered this factor evidence. They found that based on the Crist case, risk factor evidence was irrelevant, and they disregarded any possibility that risk factor evidence could potentially overcome the statutory presumption. So I think it's, you know, the right result to have an ALJ reweigh the evidence in light of the position that risk factor evidence should be considered under occupational disease analysis and can overcome the presumption potentially, and then make a subsequent finding as to whether we effectively did rebut that presumption. I think it's also important to note that once we have rebutted the presumption or presented evidence to the contrary, the burden of persuasion still remains with the claimant here. You know, the Colorado Rule Evidence 301 establishes guidance on the interpretation of rebuttable presumptions. And here, once the respondents have presented evidence of this alternative cause and effectively rebutted the presumption falls away. And then if the ALJ or fact finder is left free of the presumption to determine and weigh the evidence, irrespective of what that initial presumption provided.
Well, let me get this again. Okay, you're asking for a remand for further factual findings, basically.
Correct. But we're asking for this court to uphold the Court of Appeals finding, which remanded the case back to ALJ for consideration of the evidence based on the holding that risk factor evidence can be sufficient in determining whether the presumption was overcome.
Okay, and of course, our job in all three cases is to state what the legislature intended.
I'm sorry.
Our job is to state what the legislature intended.
Correct.
And you don't think that this ALJ in your case looked at the law in the correct way to be able to determine based on the evidence received?
Correct. But he specifically states in the paragraphs 12 and 13 of that order that we must establish a specific exact cause of claimant melanoma in order to rebut the presumption. And it's our position that is not the correct standard. It's a traditional occupational disease case.
Would new evidence be allowed on both sides on a remand like that?
I would argue there doesn't need to be new evidence, that we presented evidence of risk factor evidence at the time of the hearing, and therefore I think the record should stand as
well. Well, let's assume that they were assuming that the law is different. They characterized the legislature as having made some kind of findings or determination on causation. Let's assume that we don't agree with them. On remand, are they able to bring in additional evidence that would respond to the standard this court enunciates as the standard of law?
Meaning the standard of risk factors should be considered? I think there's evidence in the record already from their own expert that the risk factors that we presented were valid and are present and are statistically higher from a causation perspective, but their expert testified that risk does not equate cause, and therefore we did not overcome the presumption because of this. Their opinion, this expert's medical opinion, even though I think it's a legal opinion.
But you described that the burden of persuasion belongs back on them when the presumption falls away. Apparently, they haven't been looking at the law in that, in this regard, to be prepared to respond.
Well, I would argue that the law has been standing on the burden of persuasion since the inception of this statute, and that the rebuttal presumption law is clear out there, and they should have been deemed aware of it at the outset of the case. There's no conflict, or in this case, on the burden of persuasion, there's no new law that's come into play since this case began on the burdens of persuasion and rebuttal presumption. Therefore, I would not agree to a new evidence.
And so, counsel, just to make clear I understand your position, in terms of the risk factor analysis that your experts presented, you're saying that claimants' experts did not actually dispute the validity of that. They simply said, as a categorical matter, risk doesn't matter. You need to show causation.
That is exactly what she testified to.
Okay, she agreed that this particular individual's atypical mold increased his relative risk to 6.26 as compared to 5 vitamins to 1.32. She agreed that the sun exposure and atypical molds presented a significant increased relative risk. However, she gave her medical opinion was that this does not equate to cause and not of a number of risk factors when the cause of someone's cancer remains unknown. Therefore, she could not say that we rebutted the presumption that there was evidence to overcome a finding that the firefighting played no contributory role in the causation of the cancer.
And it sounds like the evidence in this case shows a fairly significant disparity from those risk factors based on exposure versus the moles or sun exposure or something outside the wood.
That is correct.
In a future case, though, what would that need to look like? What if they were roughly even? Are you saying basically in order to rebut the presumption it needs to be as
no.
as you suggest, as it appears to be in this case? Or
no, I think we just simply look to the proponents of the evidence standard, and more probably than not, which the legislative history indicates is a 51% mark on the rebuttable presumption. So we do always have to compare the relevant risk factors in the case, but it doesn't need to be that large of a disparity. I think you just look at what is the more likely or 51% cause of the claimant's cancer in these cases, and what that looks like from a numerical or statistical perspective, you know, should be determined on a case-by-case basis. But I think it's important to note that not every case is going to have a claimant with the significantly increased relative risk outside of firefighting. It's going to have to be determined on a case-by-case basis, just like any other case under an occupational disease analysis. And as long as we meet that 51% mark, then I would argue we've met our burden to overcome that presumption.
Thank you. Maybe it would be helpful if you say this should be treated as a traditional occupational case. But, I mean, what's a more traditional example, perhaps, that you could give us? I mean, you're implying that this happens all the time in these cases, right?
Correct.
And maybe you could give us some other examples of where your analysis applies.
So occupational disease cases are cases where, for example, someone may have been exposed to asbestos in the workplace, and over time, you know, it's caused a condition. So in those cases, the medical treatment guidelines, the level one accreditation curriculum guidelines, instruct physicians to utilize risk factors in determining causation issues. So they look at all the various risk factors an individual may have been exposed to outside of work versus what he was exposed to inside of work, and weigh those risk factors in determining the causation of one's compensability or compensable condition. The only difference here is that the burden shifts from the claimant to respondents. And that's simply the heart of the statute. As indicated in legislative history, it's loud to state that it is the heart of the statute. And that is simply what we're dealing with here. What type of evidence should be admissible to overcome that statutory presumption? And it is our position that under traditional occupational disease analysis, risk factor evidence is sufficient to overcome that presumption.
And just one follow-up then. So that's, I guess, your point that we know here that firefighting exacerbated in some way.
We stipulate it, correct.
We know that.
Correct.
And it's simply that something else is more likely than not the cause. I guess that's your position.
Right. It's our position that the test should not be whether firefighting played no positive role in the development of the melanoma. What is the more likely cause when you compare the risk factors? I mean, that is all we are able to do here because there are no known causes of cancer. We only have risk factors. So if we're ever precluded from presenting that evidence, the statute becomes strict liability statute, and that's definitely not the legislature intended.
And just real quickly on that, by more likely cause, then, do you mean to be saying that is it more likely than not that but for these pre-existing circumstances or his condition that his work-related exposure would not have caused this cancer? Is that what more likely than that means?
Well, I think what you're indicating is an aggravation or hastening theory, which was addressed, again, by that Crist case. And I would argue that hastening presumption or but-for presumption, if that is implied or imposed upon respondents, it still results in a strict liability statute. Because you're never going to be able to show that firefighting played no contributory role once they meet that presumption. and we only are able to compare the relative increased risks, which, again, are not going to be present in all of these cases. You know, there's not always going to be a prostate cancer case where there's individuals with five relatives that have prostate cancer versus someone who has no relatives with it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ernest.
Thank you very much. Mr. O'Toole?
Let me first start by disagreeing as the characterization of Dr. Mayer's testimony as agreeing with the opinions reached by Dr. Milligan. Her statement, there are many people in Colorado with one or more of those same risk factors who do not have melanoma. Mr. Zukowski's mother and siblings have multiple nevi's. None have been diagnosed with melanoma. History of molds and sun exposure are common in Colorado adult populations. He appears to have had a few dysplastic nevi, and it too is common, and people don't have melanoma. So disagreeing with her characterization as agreement. Now, one of the problems that comes up in firefighter cases, and one of the problems that I am confronting in these cases, is that if this presumption is read to simply be a preponderance of evidence standard, it knocks the presumption out of the ballpark. You mentioned, Your Honor, traditional occupational disease cases. Asbestosis is a perfect example. Many scientific studies have associated asbestosis with the development of certain symptomatology, and in fact, under the work comp statute, there is a presumption about causation. It's not presumption, I apologize. There is a holding of that type of exposure in a certain level. Most occupational diseases arise because of overuse syndrome, continued traumatic exposures of some sort or another. What's the problem with that analysis in this case? The problem is you cannot subject firefighters to testing to find a dose response. How much benzene will it result in an individual suffering prostate cancer? Cancer of the digestive urinary system. What chemicals are going off at any particular fire? Impossible, that is impossible for the firefighter to determine. Of course, we don't expect them, do we, to say, wait, maybe there's cadmium in there. I don't know. I don't want to go in because there may be some problem that's going to result in cancer. We do not know what's in there. We do know that there are certain chemicals as listed in the masters, which are in most fires or in many fires. Remember, we have several things that go on, particularly in the melanoma area. The determination of exposure in melanoma with regard to the chemicals, carcinogens, is complicated further by, it's basically up until about 2008 or so, firefighters, after the suppression phase of the firefighting, when they're putting down the fire, would take off their shirts. And the overall phase is probably the most dangerous. And a lot of cancers you're seeing probably have some relationship to that view that this is okay. Now a lot of firefighters are, and they also have a whole thing with not cleaning their uniforms. It was a status. Put on that bumper suit, stuff hasn't been washed in a year and a half. Loaded with soot. That's just the way it was. So, you know, there is really no correlation between traditional occupational disease cases. Because if you start to interpret the presumption and introduce the relevant counterfactual situation as a potential for determining what the legislature intended, you're losing it, the firefighters are losing out. They can't prove it. It's impossible for them to tell you what chemicals they were exposed to at any time. They can all say.
I think your point is this, that asbestos, which is commonly in buildings, they would be exposed to these fibers.
Sure.
That simply taking in risk factors that many people don't
That's right.
You know.
I agree.
That there is some kind of causative relationship that goes to the benefit of the firefighters.
You have to show, of course, in those cases, that you've actually been exposed to that asbestos. You know, we have these cases with multiple chemical sensitivities that are hard to prove because you don't have an established trigger in the building. Mold is a perfect example, because when they're testing for mold, some people are subject to it, some people are not. So I'd say that it's a little different. These guys are in an occupation that's intended to protect us. And the legislature said, let's protect them.
And we don't want to have them second-guessing or refusing to go in based on a particular circumstance.
You know,
a building that has known its...
I tell you, no matter what happens up here, they're not going to second-guess no matter what. They're going to go in. They've been told. They know. They know the master study. The IA, International Association of Professional Firefighters, told them all. These guys aren't giving up. What they're trying to do is they're trying to do better things with better SCBAs, better bunker gear, etc. But they're not about to give up going in and fighting for us. And the question is, should we make sure we're protecting them who's willing to sacrifice themselves? It's a social policy decision. One of the things I've argued, which seems to be not particularly well addressed, and I haven't seen any of my opponents, please. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Mr. O'Toole and Mr. McKenna.